This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information and to find out how to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Marion Brown, Toronto, Canada. The Country of the Pointed Firs by Sarah Orne Jewett. Chapter 15. On Shell Heap Island. Some time after Mrs. Fosdick's visit was over, and we had returned to our former quietness, I was out sailing alone with Captain Bowden in his large boat. We were taking the crooked northeasterly channel seaward, and were well out from shore while it was still early in the afternoon. I found myself presently among some unfamiliar islands, and suddenly remembered the story of poor Joanna. There is something in the fact of a hermitage that cannot fail to touch the imagination. The recluses are a sad kindred, but they are never commonplace. Mrs. Todd had truly said that Joanna was like one of the saints in the desert. The loneliness of sorrow will forever keep alive their sad succession. "Where is Shell Heap Island?" I asked eagerly. "You see Shell Heap now, layin' way out beyond Black Island there," answered the captain, pointing with outstretched arm as he stood and holding the rudder with his knee. "I should like very much to go there," said I, and the captain, without comment, changed his course a little more to the eastward and let the reef out of his mainsail. "I don't know's we can make an easy landin' for ye," he remarked doubtfully. "May get your feet wet. Bad place to land. Trouble is, I ought to have brought a tag boat, but they clutch on the water so, and I do love to sail free. This great boat gets easy bothered with anything trailin'. Tain't breakin' much on the meetin' house ledges. Guess I can fetch in to Shell Heap." "How long is it since Miss Joanna Todd died?" I asked, partly by way of explanation. 22 years come September," answered the captain after reflection. "She died the same year as my oldest boy was born, and the townhouse was burnt over to the port. I didn't know but you merely wanted to hunt for some of them Indian relics. Long's you want to see where Joanna lived. No, 'tain't breakin' over the ledges. We'll manage to fetch across the shoal somehow. 'Tis such a distance to go way round, and tide's a-risin'." He ended hopefully, and we sailed steadily on, the captain speechless with intent, watching of a difficult course, until the small island, with its low whitish promontory, lay in full view before us under the bright afternoon sun. The month was August, and I had seen the color of the islands change from the fresh green of June to the sunburnt brown that made them look like stone, except where the dark green of the spruces and fir balsam kept the tint that even winter storms might deepen but not fade. The few wind-bent trees on Shell Heap Island were mostly dead and gray, but there were some low-growing bushes, and a stripe of light green ran along just above the shore, which I knew to be wild morning glories. As we came close, I could see the high stone walls of a small square field, though there were no sheep left to assail it, and below there was a little harbor-like cove where Captain Bowden was boldly running the great boat in to seek a landing place. There was a crooked channel of deep water which led close up against the shore. "There, you hold fast forward there, and wait for her to lift on the wave. You'll make a good landin' if you're smart." "Right on the port-hand side," the captain called excitedly, and I, standing ready with high ambition, seized my chance and leaped over to the grassy bank. "I'm beat if I ain't aground after all," mourned the captain despondently. But I could reach the bowsprit, and he pushed with the boat hook, while the wind veered round a little as if on purpose, and helped with the sail. So presently the boat was free, and began to drift out from shore. "Used to call this point Joanna's Wharf Privilege, but it worn away in the weather since her time. I thought one or two bumps wouldn't hurt us none. Paint's got to be renewed anyway, but I never thought she'd tetch." "I figured on shyin' by," the captain apologized. "She's too great a boat to handle well in here, but I used to sort of shy by in Joanna's day and cast a little something ashore, some apples or a couple of pears if I had 'em, on the grass where she'd be sure to see. I stood watching while Captain Bowden cleverly found his way back to the deep water. "You needn't make no haste," he called to me. "I'll keep within call. Joanna lays right up there in the far corner of the field. There used to be a path led to the place. I always knew her well. I was out here to the funeral." I found the path. It was touching to discover that this lonely spot was not without its pilgrims. Later generations will know less and less of Joanna herself, but there are paths trodden to the shrines of solitude the world over. The world cannot forget them, try as it may. The feet of the young find them out because of curiosity and dim foreboding, while the old bring hearts full of remembrance. This plain anchorite had been one of those whom sorrow made too lonely to brave the sight of men, too timid to front the simple world she knew, yet valiant enough to live alone with her poor, insistent human nature and the calms and passions of the sea and sky. The birds were flying all about the field. They fluttered up out of the grass at my feet as I walked along, so tame that I liked to think they kept some happy tradition from summer to summer of the safety of nests and good fellowship of mankind. Poor Joanna's house was gone except the stones of its foundations, and there was little trace of her flower garden except a single faded sprig of much-enduring French pinks, which a great bee and a yellow butterfly were befriending together. I drank at the spring, and thought that now and then someone would follow me from the busy, hard-worked, and simple-thoughted countryside of the mainland, which lay dim and dreamlike in the August haze, as Joanna must have watched it many a day. There was the world, and here was she, with eternity well begun. "In the life of each of us," I said to myself, "there is a place remote and islanded, and given to endless regret or secret happiness. We are each the uncompanioned hermit and recluse of an hour or a day. We understand our fellows of the cell to whatever age of history they may belong." But as I stood alone on the island in the sea breeze, suddenly there came a sound of distant voices, gay voices and laughter from a pleasure boat that was going seaward full of boys and girls. I knew, as if she had told me, that poor Joanna must have heard the like on many and many a summer afternoon, and must have welcomed the good cheer in spite of hopelessness and winter weather, and all the sorrow and disappointment in the world. End of chapter 15.